Now, almost 5 minutes after 7. Please note that assistive listening devices for the use for the council chamber are now available on request from staff in the clerk's office or from Laura down here on my right. I will now ask the acting mayor, Councillor DeBoer, to please start the meeting with a prayer and sing the national anthem.
And sing it. Help us this day to run with patience the race that is set before us. May neither opposition without nor discouragement within divert us from our goal. Inspire us both strength of main, steadfastness of purpose, that we may fulfill all fears and difficulties with unwavering courage, and may fulfill the quiet fidelity of the task committed to our charge.
Thank you, everybody. As you notice, some of us are wearing jeans today. Today's the, if you contribute money to breast cancer, we're wearing denim today to promote the breast cancer fundraising. And so if you see the little pink ribbon and why we're wearing denim, and I want to thank everybody for participating in the cause. I think it's a very good one. Is there any disclosure of a pecuniary interest? Councillor McClure?
It's on the Andrews Drain. It's not here.
It's in the minutes, yes.
Yes, in the minutes. No, it's for the April 26th council meeting.
Yes. Yes, so both myself and you, because of the Municipal Drain Act, we will have that. So when the minutes come up, Councillor DeBoer will take the floor and do that. Okay, if there's no further, we'll move on to added items. Please note, in accordance with the procedural bylaw, deferred matter concerning planning and development community report, March 22, 2016, regarding Highway 10 has been added to this evening's agenda. Okay, now we'll go to the confirmation of minutes, and Councillor DeBoer, if I can have you please take the floor, and I'll remove myself along with Councillor DeBoer. It's on the minutes, so we've got to...
Oh, yeah, you need a mover. Okay, moved by Councillor Innes, seconded by Councillor Groves, that the council meeting minutes dated April 26, 2016 be approved. All in favor? Carried. To take back his chair.
Thank you, Councillor DeBoer. For urgent business matters, first of all, there's one, I guess, Councillor Mizzapelli, but if I could just take a couple of minutes first. I want to take a few minutes and turn off our thoughts to the people in Fort McMurray, Alberta, who had to flee their homes last week, a little more than nothing than the clothes on their back. And I know some of them were at work and had to leave their pets and couldn't get back to them. And the good news is most of them have been rescued. I can't imagine how difficult it must be for them. Also, I want to acknowledge and thank the brave firefighters and emergency workers across Canada who are on the scene to help fight the fire for those families and cope with tremendous loss. And I also learned today that a lot of the municipal people stayed back and were providing aid as well as shelter for the firefighters coming in and different people. So I got to tell you, I got to say, they're all heroes, and I think we all need to think of it. And Councillor Misipelli, I understand you have a motion you want to bring forward. Okay, moved by Councillor Misipelli, second by Councillor Shaughnessy, that the motion without notice be introduced regarding the massive wildfire of Fort McMurray, Alberta, as it is time sensitive. All in favor? It's carried. Now we'll move on to the motion. Moved by Councillor Misipelli, second by Councillor Innes, where a massive wildfire in Fort McMurray, Alberta, has threatened a dozen communities in the area since it started spreading May 1st, 2016. Whereas a mandatory evacuation has forced all 70,000 Fort McMurray residents to leave their homes in search of safety, the largest fire-related evacuation in the province history. Whereas donations may provide relief for those affected in the form of emergency food and clothing and shelter and personal services, other necessities to help assist with the recovery of the relationship. Whereas the Canadian Red Cross has launched Alberta Fire's appeal to provide donations of the community for Fort McMurray. Now, therefore, it be resolved that the Town of Caledon provide a donation to the Red Cross Alberta Fire's appeal in the amount of $5,000 to be funded from the corporate account grant account 01-10-115-40010-365-62319, and that further copies of this resolution be forwarded to the Association of Municipalities of Ontario, the Region Appeal, the City of Mississauga, the City of Brampton for information. Okay, no one can speak to it, right? Okay. Any Councillor Misipelli?
Thank you, Mayor Thompson. Obviously, we know what this is all about, and it is an extremely unfortunate event that has happened in Fort McMurray. And we count ourselves very lucky and blessed to be in a community where we have an opportunity to help. And I think this is the right thing to do, and that's why it's before us today.
And thank you for championing this, Councillor Misipelli, and I know all of council, and I know we've helped when we've had severe floods across the province and out of the province, and as well as, I guess, with the refugees as well. So I think it's only fitting that we do this, and thank you for bringing the motion forward. And I will now call the vote. All in favor? It's carried. There are no delegations. Deferred business, as noted, there is one deferred item from Planning and Development Committee report dated March 22, 2016. Moved by Councillor Shaughnessy, second by Councillor Misipelli, that the March 22, 2016 Planning and Development Committee report recommendations regarding the matter be adopted, Highway 10. All in favor? Opposed? Guys, I haven't got enough votes here to say all in favor. All in favor? I think everybody knows that we're bringing the motion forward, and this is to waive the... Okay. It's carried. We're not dealing with that right now. Okay. Moved by Councillor Downey, second by Councillor Shaughnessy, that the May 3rd, 2016 Planning Development Committee recommendations regarding the consent item be adopted. Heritage Caledon Report, April 18th, 2016. All in favor? Carried. Moved Moved by Councillor DeBoer, second by Councillor Groves, that May 3rd, 2016 Planning Development Committee report recommendations regarding the following matter be adopted. Report 2016-38, Region Appeal Growth Management Update. All in favor? Carried. Moving forward, we have a number of presentations tonight. So the first one we'll have is scheduled for this evening. I will now call on Dave Quinton, board member from Family Transition Place, Robert Horner on behalf of Mentors, to approach the podium and provide a presentation concerning the second annual In Her Shoes event. And please note that according to the procedural bylaw, you will be provided 10 minutes for presentation. And I'll ask council, because of everything we've got, we need questions for the group. It's all yours.
Thank you. Honorable Mayor, Member of Council, my name is Dave Quinton. I bring greetings and regrets from Nora Kennedy, Executive Director. I just found out 10 minutes ago that she would not be here, and I've been asked to fill in. So I have nothing prepared, but hopefully I can provide you with information that you'll appreciate and understand from Family Transition Place's standpoint. As many of you know, Family Transition Place is located in Orangeville. It provides emergency housing for victims of domestic violence and their children on an emergency basis. Currently, there is 33 people in the shelter, and usually over a whole year, it is usually over-occupant. There's more occupants than there are beds, so they have to squeeze people in an emergency basis. Not only do they provide emergency shelters, they provide counseling, sexual assault, and domestic violence, and family counseling for men, women, and children, as well as second stage housing. You might wonder why there's a man on the board of directors. Family and Transition Place is one of the leaders, quite honestly, in the movement to eliminate violence against women. And since most of the offenses are created and perpetrated by men, they saw it fit to include men in trying to solve the problem. When I joined the board 6 years ago, I was the fourth man on a nine-member board. So it's really powerful for them to understand that they are looking at every avenue to try and achieve their goals of eliminating violence against women and children. I can tell you that it was Nora's idea to initially start a campaign, teeing us up with White Ribbon Campaign to eliminate and bring awareness of domestic violence and sexual assault. And 2 years ago, we morphed from White Ribbon into the Mentors realm, which brings us here today with our T-shirts. We're really proud of being, I'm proud of being on the board of directors. I'm proud of being on the Mentors team. And subject to any questions that any of you may have, that would complete my small presentation. And I would turn it over to Mr. Horner if nobody has any questions.
I think we're good at this point, so I'll turn it over to Mr. Horner, and maybe there'll be some questions that'll come out of this. So,
thank you. Mr. Mayor, Honorable Council Representatives, ladies and gentlemen, Town of Kalamazoo. Thanks for the invitation and the opportunity to introduce the mentors. A few of us are here today, just in good representation. We're a committee of men representing Family Transition Place, affectionately known as FTP. We are men who oppose violence against women and are dedicated to changing what it means to be a man. Many of us have our own reasons for being mentors. Some of us have a generous spirit. Some of us have a gentle nature. We are family men. We have sons and daughters. Most of us hate abusers, but we all detest violence against women. One thing is all but certain. All of us, mentors, counselors, citizens of Caledon, all of us have witnessed the violence either first or secondhand. The odds are high that if not you personally, then someone you know, a friend, a family member, maybe a friend of theirs, have been faced by this horrible crime. It is a crime. We are fighting a difficult battle, but one worth fighting for, to end violence against women. We all know and even agree that violence against women exists, but we don't talk about it. That's why Mentors exists, to lend a voice to the cause, to carry on the conversation, to stir the proverbial pot. We're also changing what it means to be a man. to remove the stigmatism that is the male bravado. No longer do you need to be tough, macho, and aggressive to be a man. You can be warm, gentle, and caring. Mentors are, at least we think we are. While we're not here for monetary support at this time, donations to FTP are always welcomed. We are here to seek your support, your blessing, and your endorsement for our fundraiser, Empathy Walk. Walk in her shoes. Come out and join the fun, the hilarity, the cause, as mentors and many others besides walk in her shoes while wearing pink high heels to raise funds and bring awareness to the issue in support of FTP to stop violence against women. Our first walk is here in Caledon, right next door, on Sunday, September 12th. I believe it's at 10 a.m. Here at the Caledon Community Center. We also have a walk in Orangeville at the Farmers Market on Saturday, June 18th at 10 a.m. at Alexandra Park at Town Hall. Please visit us at familytransitionplace.ca. Follow us on Twitter at MentorsFTP or go to our Facebook page to discover how you can support our cause. Thank you for your time today.
Councillor Groves.
Thank you, Mayor Thompson. Thank you for coming in and for stepping up to the plate and in ending violence against women. I am, there was a time in my life, I served as an executive director for a women's shelter. And I will tell you, the women that come into those shelters, they are afraid. They leave their homes with nothing. They come with their children. And it's great to have places like Family Transition Place and other women's shelter that help these women transition and integrate back into the community. They live in fear, and sometimes being back in the community, they continue to live in fear because their spouses, whomever, they're always afraid that that will continue to happen. So I want to thank you for stepping up. The other thing that is really important and the message that we need to get out there is there are many women who are afraid to come forward, and they live in homes and in an environment where it is extremely violent, but they are afraid. They're afraid for their children's safety, and so they stay. I think that it's not just helping the women that have managed to flee and to get away, but it's also helping those who are living in silence and to break that silence. And we need to do whatever we can to encourage women that there is help available, that there are people like yourselves and like the folks who work in the shelters, the volunteers, the police, that they are there to help them. So, again, thank you for stepping up to the plate, and I hope that someday this vicious cycle of violence will end. It is important to end it because sometimes the children are affected. Children sometimes have learned behavior. They see the violence in the home and it carries on. Boys become violent. Boys become the abusers. Women, young girls, believe that it's normal to be living and to blame themselves and that it is normal to say, yeah, it's okay if my boyfriend beats me up. It's okay if he bullies me. If it's okay if he controls me or my husband or whatever. So that is even more so important that, that it doesn't continue on with those children. So thank you again.
Thank you.
Councillor Downey.
Thank you, through you, Mayor Thompson. On the heels of Councillor Groves, the question attached to that sentiment in terms of the younger generation is, do you have an opportunity to take your platform into the high schools and the colleges and meet and talk to the younger men, the younger generation? Is that something that you do?
Yeah, actually, unfortunately, our educator couldn't be here, but we do have an education platform within FTP, and they go out and they educate the high schools and talk about the issues involved with violence against women, and again, what it means to be a man. You don't have to be aggressive. You don't have to be this tough individual to get by. So our goal is to reach young men and young boys at an early age. We'd like it if we could, you know, change men's awareness, but we realize that reaching the young men and the youth is more important, is where our interest lies.
That's great. Thank you. I appreciate all of the work you do. And on a side note, and I'm not sure if we'd had this conversation before, but my father was one of the first men sitting on the FTP board as well, so a long time ago. Thank you.
Robert, could you introduce your team here?
Sure. This on my left here is Gus Werner. On my right, we have Adrian Beta. Some of you know Tony Maxwell. He's with us as well. And Dave Quinton is also a board member and member of FTP, or mentors, I believe.
So I know you talked a little bit about walking in their shoes. Can you explain how far you're walking in the shoes? What takes place? Can you walk us through this? Maybe we can get... I think Councillor Befford and Councillor McClure are interested, but I'm just saying maybe the rest of us all should too. But what are we in here for? Or I guess this is what we need to...
You know what? I think some of us are thankful that the walk is probably only about a kilometer long. Is it? It's less than a kilometer. But yeah, it's a very short walk, but the idea is to step into her shoes and create the awareness that it's difficult being a woman and to create the empathy involved.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, and we'll see what we can do. You know, we've got till June to see what we can do. Councillor Groves? Clarification?
Not a clarification, but I just wanted to let you know as well. I know that I attended an event, and it's around. They brought in a few leaders in the community, because one of the things and that's attached to violence against women is culture, and I will tell you, they had leaders from all different cultures, men, and they are standing up and they are teaching their communities that it is not okay to lay their hands on a woman. So that is really encouraging to see that whole culture shift is happening. So.
Okay. No further questions. Thank you so much for coming in, gentlemen.
Thank you for
your time. Let's hope we have a good turnout for your events.
Thank you.
Thank you. I will now call upon Ann Lehman Allison and Lou Castellini to accounts manager on behalf of Impact to approach the podium and provide a presentation concerning and delivering the 2016 assessment update.
Good evening.
Yeah. So
thanks very much for having me.
Not a problem. And you have 10 minutes, as you know, it's procedure.
Yes, so. I've been told, and I've been pretty good so far.
Not a problem. I know the clerk's holding me to a tight timeline here.
Okay, thanks very much. We'll just get right to the slide. So this is, we're here to talk about the 2016 assessment update, and I'm here from MPAC. My name is Ann Lehman Allison. I'm an account manager for this area. And unfortunately, my colleague Lou could not make it, but I do have Greg Baxter with me. He's the Director of Valuation Customer Relations for this zone. So to get right to it, just a little bit about property assessment and property taxes in Ontario. The Municipal Property Assessment Corporation is responsible for assessing and classifying properties in Ontario. The provincial government sets assessment policies and passes legislation, also determines the education tax rate. Municipalities, that's yourselves, make decisions about how the property tax burden is spread and property tax rates. I'm here to talk to you tonight really because we're in, we have a four-year assessment cycle, and last time we did an assessment update was 2012. So 2016 is an assessment update year. We have a valuation date of January 1st, 2016. So every property owner in Ontario will receive a property assessment notice this year. And these values will be used for property taxation from the years 2017 to 2020. One of the things that we're doing differently this year is we started our work and we're talking to people earlier. So in 2012, we started our work at the beginning of 2012. Property assessment notices went out in the fall, and then we delivered the roll in December. For the 2016 assessment update, we actually started our work in 2014. So we will have advanced disclosure. That's why property assessment notices are coming out early. We're on a rolling schedule between April and August. And property assessment notices in Caledon will go out on May 18th this year. One of the things that we're able to do with this additional time is additional sales investigations, data quality checks. As I said, we can consult more with you. And we've also redesigned our property assessment notice to make it easier to read. And we've redesigned aboutmyproperty.ca, which is our website. I mentioned increased data quality. One of the things we've been able to do is check over 20,000 data elements just in the town of Caledon. So we've done some updates that have helped transparency and understanding. One of the things we have is an advanced disclosure process. Level one of this disclosure process is our methodology guides. Methodology guides actually explain to property taxpayers how we assess certain types of properties. Level two is where we take that methodology and apply it to markets, and we provide reports so you can see actually how that methodology is played out. You can also access property-specific valuation information, and that type of information is available through aboutmyproperty.ca. There are, of course, many benefits of advanced disclosure. Really, it's about the feedback. So when we get out there early, we're talking to people early, and we're taking feedback. So instead of sending the notices out very shortly before the roll, we've got months to actually talk to property taxpayers about what we're doing. This won't prevent appeals, but it should help prevent surprises. As I mentioned, property assessment notices will go out May 18th in Caledon. Farm property notices will go out on October 11th, and multi-residential and business notices will go out October 18th. And again, these valuations will apply to the 2017 through 2020 tax years. So a little bit about the residential experience. We know that the property assessment notice is really our key touch point with property taxpayers. So we've done some updates, we did some research, we talked to property taxpayers about how they felt about the notice and whether they felt it was easy to read. So we have made some changes. We've applied plain language and good design principles to our new notice. One thing that's new is we put the issue date right at the top of the notice, and that is very important when you're talking about appeals and a request for reconsideration process. As I mentioned, we incorporated plain language and design principles. This next part of the notice, the 2016 assessed value and the change in assessed value from the 2012 assessment update are highlighted clearly. One of the things property taxpayers told us was quite confusing to them was the phase-in process. So in this next section of the notice, we've clearly identified the phase-in values for each of the years from 2017 through 2020. And we've identified the request for reconsideration deadline for each of those years. Now, this is the section we'd really like to encourage everyone to review. So your property-specific information is in this section, and one of the reasons that we're sending the notices out again is to ensure that we get people to call us if there are any issues. So this is really important. If there's any information there that is not right, we're encouraging people to go on aboutmyproperty.ca to check it out or give us a call. And as I was just saying about my property, it's right on the property assessment notice. This has all kinds of information that will be of interest to anyone looking to find out about how we value their property. And at the end of the property assessment notice, just a little bit about the roles and responsibilities, as I mentioned before, and a few things about the types of things that property taxes go to pay for. So we do have a few changes this year, and one of those changes is a result of the Budget Measures Act 2015. Now we have 120 days from the issue date to file a request for reconsideration. So the request for reconsideration deadline for Caledon is September 15th. The issue date and the RFR deadline are clearly identified on the notice. So how can anyone learn more about their assessment? As I mentioned before, aboutmyproperty.ca has been updated and redesigned this year. It includes market trends for properties, for residential property taxpayers in their neighborhood so they can understand the comparable properties in their area. Property taxpayers can access basic information for 100 properties and detailed information for 24. They can get copies of their property assessment notice, save it, print it, and they can review, of course, detailed property information about their own property. So we've got a five-step process if somebody is concerned about their assessment. Really, the first question to ask themselves is, could I have sold my property for this amount on January 1st, 2016? If so, then you could be done. It's time to file your notice away. If not, if you want to check and see how we might have valued other properties in your neighborhood, other comparable properties, visit aboutmyproperty.ca. As I mentioned, you can access information there. If you still have concerns, contact us. We'll be happy to walk you through anything you need to understand or want to talk about. You can also file a request for reconsideration, which is the formal review process, and you can actually do that through aboutmyproperty.ca as well. The request for reconsideration process is free. If you are still concerned after that process is done, you can file an appeal with the Assessment Review Board, but there is a filing fee of $75 for that service, and that is run by the province. So I mentioned the ability to contact MPAC. Our customer contact center is open from Monday to Friday from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. For anyone who has any questions. There are a few other things that we've been working on, actually, to work better with municipalities and our stakeholders. One of those is a redesigned Municipal Connect. This is our service, our application, that revenue and tax staff use to access real-time assessment information. So we've updated it this year with the 2016 base values. We also have a range of brochures, and you will have those in your packages. So you can have a look at those, and I'll be working with your municipal staff to make sure those are available. We've also given municipalities a toolkit. So this is full of information, frequently asked questions, and a range of digital tools that they can use for print, web, or social media. So preliminary market trends. We will have this information loaded into About My Property very shortly, and we'll be doing some media in the area to make sure people are aware. This is what market trends looks like. You can actually have a look right now. We don't have Caledon information loaded until May 18th, but you can type in Barrie if you want to take a look. Their property assessment notices went out a little bit earlier. So this is the preliminary values we are seeing for the region of Peel and Caledon. Overall residential is up from 2016 to 2017 by about 6.3%. Single family residential 6.2% and condominium 3.9%. Just to give you an idea about typical values and how that has increased, single family residential has increased by about 129,000. To typical residents of 644,000, and condominium values would have gone up about $73,000 for a typical condominium value of 513,000. And that is my presentation.
Okay.
If anybody has any questions or comments?
Councillor Groves.
Thank you, Mary Thompson, through you. Thank you for the presentation. Oftentimes, residents are not clear on how this works, and so whenever there's something, they think it's the municipality that controls this. So thank you for coming in. Now, I do send out a newsletter, a monthly newsletter, and I wouldn't mind having your presentation, an electronic copy of the presentation, so that I can include it in the newsletter because I think this is helpful information for our residents. And sometimes, so question, sometimes they're afraid to come to MPAC because you may look at their property and say, well, geez, I didn't realize you did this and you did that, and so it goes up. So how do they get around that?
Well, I mean, that is true. If somebody files a request or has something that they are concerned about, then we do have to assess. I mean, this is based on market values. It's based on what we see. So it's not something that, you know, we can't come for one reason and disregard for another.
Mm-hmm.
That said, I mean, there's nothing stopping anyone from calling our contact center and just talking it through.
Okay. And I think that would be helpful for residents, that they can contact someone, because a lot of times, like I said, they believe that it's the municipality that really controls that and, mm-hmm. and deals with that. So I'm happy to have an electronic copy of that presentation so that I can send that out to my residents.
Yeah, and there's also, as I mentioned, the municipal toolkit. There's a range of Q's and A's and tools in there. That you might be able to access as well.
Yeah, that would be great, because having the right information is very important. So
absolutely.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, thank you, Councillor Groves. Councillor Downey.
Thank you, through you, Mayor Thompson. Thank you for your presentation. I have two questions. After going through the steps, if someone wants to appeal their assessment, what would their basis be after going through those steps? Like you mentioned, the first step is asking if it's actually, you know, has that value,
mm-hmm.
and then that's kind of your dead stop. So what would be an example of an appeal that then would be successful? Like what basis would someone have to do that?
Well, we appeal, and or the property owner would appeal, but I can't say what would be successful and what would not be. The property owner would bring the information to us. If you're talking about a request for reconsideration process, mm-hmm. that's really the first step. And it's important to know, actually, that to go to the assessment review board, you have to have gone to file a request for reconsideration with MPAC for a residential property, absolutely, mm-hmm. before you go. So it's really just bringing all the information mm-hmm. forward. And we'll make an assessment. I mean, our evaluators are professional evaluators. They meet international standards of assessment and valuation, so they're very professional. They do have to make a determination based on what they see.
Absolutely, thank you. And my second question is then, within their determination, how much weight does the market carry? Because just, you know, from a real estate perspective, and then the financial institution, typically when you're appraised by a financial institution, it's lower than what the real estate agent may say the value is. So how do you balance that out?
Well, really, financial institutions and insurance companies actually use our data. So, I mean, we're kind of the closest you can get. That's part of the standards. I'm sorry, I didn't get the second part of your question.
So I guess my question is how much weight
mm-hmm.
within that evaluation.
Yeah. Well, it is based on market.
Using yours, and then you.
Right. It is based on market value and our market analysis mm-hmm. and the comparable properties. So, you know, that's kind of the professional valuation process. That said, there are five elements that that a property owner can look to that really this ends up being kind of 85% of your property value. So it's your lot size.
Mm-hmm.
It's the square footage of your structure. It is the neighborhood that you're in. It is the age and the quality of construction. So these things are, you know, that makes up kind of 85% of what your market value is.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Councillor Misipelli.
Thank you, Mayor Thompson. Thank you, Anne, for your presentation. Just one question, and I think I've sat through two of these, and the trend is always going up, and I know it's phased in over the years within the review. Mm-hmm. If there were to be an incident where there was a market correction, which happens in a relatively short period of time, does MPAC wait until the next review, or would that be something significant enough to reassess at that time?
Well, if you're talking about a crash that would happen kind of widespread, I guess, well, first I would have to say no. We have legislative valuation dates, so it would wait till the next valuation date. But it would be important to note that everybody would be subject to these same market conditions.
Right.
So really, it's not, this is about spreading the tax burden evenly. And so we would wait until the next valuation date. But as I said, everybody would be subject to that same condition.
Okay, thank you.
Councillor Groves? Okay. Councillor DeBoer?
I guess I wasn't going to ask any, but that last statement, I don't believe any of our residents will say making, passing the tax, which is equitably, because a house is worth $1 million and a house is worth $500,000, the request for services will be exactly the same. They get garbage, they get a road snow plowed, they get street lights, they get the same street lights, same garbage pickup. Mm-hmm. So I think that statement doesn't really fit. It's a way to come to a conclusion to collect money, but I don't think that it's an equitable solution.
Well, like I said, we are kind of legislated to do what we do.
Well, I know, and I also know the history of how they came to MPACT. I also have that piece of it from years ago when they said that we've got to come up with revamping the tax system. Right. I just don't think that we or you should be saying that this is an equitable way to collect the tax dollars, because it isn't.
Mm. Well, as I said, this is what's in the legislation.
I think it's better to say this is in the legislation, this is what we're required to do, rather than saying it's equitable.
Okay. Absolutely, sir.
That was all.
No, I
was going to leave it alone otherwise.
I don't think he's had supper tonight. You got to understand that.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, I have one quick question for you, and I know you talk about residential, but you didn't bring anything up about agriculture, and I know it's not till fall. Mm-hmm. Do you have any idea what the increase is going to be? Because we had a whopping 76% increase the last round. Mm. I was just wondering, is it going to be as great, or can you give us a range?
This time we're really still analyzing the data.
Okay.
We're looking at the market. We're looking at especially farmer-to-farmer sales, which is really important. I think one of the things is about this valuation year that's very different from past is the additional consultation. So I actually, we had come to Caledon in November to discuss land values and how we value land. We're absolutely willing, and we actually want to come back to Caledon after we've completed the market analysis and visit with property taxpayers, farm property taxpayers, to discuss that information.
Yeah, I know you've done this in the past with the Peel Federation of Agriculture, and generally you've had a good turnout, but I know the last time was a huge whopping increase, so I think that's the big panic is, are we over or is there going to be another big one? So anyway, we're looking forward to it in the fall.
Yes, we will be back.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming. Okay, I will now call upon Pat Moyle, Interim General Manager of Community Services, to approach the podium to provide a presentation concerning status report on Peel governance.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The purpose of this report this evening is to provide a status report or an update on the issue of Peel governance. There will be a memo and a specific resolution which will be brought forward at the next meeting for action. So the Peel Governance Task Force was created by Peel Council several years ago. It consists of the mayor, the chairs, and the CAOs. Following several meetings, a decision was taken to use the services of a facilitator to assist in moving the discussion along. So the region retained two facilitators, Peter McLeod and Ron Cantner, and they were retained to facilitate the discussions and develop options and recommendations for a report back to regional council in June. So June the 9th, I think, is the last meeting of the task force, and I believe there will be some decisions made by regional council in that month. So there are two governance issues. The first relates to regional representation, and the second is the selection process for the regional chair. The status report deals with the first item, which is representation. So what is the two other municipalities have taken formal positions. Brampton, by way of resolution at a council meeting on April the 13th, and this is parroted from the resolution. It says, pending the results of the work of the task force, an independent study be commissioned to evaluate the cost benefits of a single-tier city option for Brampton, status quo, and amalgamation. The resolution had a second part, which was to request the region to change the size of regional council to include all of Brampton Council members on regional council in time for the 2018 election. And that would see the increase in the representation going from 7 to 11. So Mississauga has taken a position. Their first resolution, or their first decision, really was to seek to separate from Peel Region. But they've subsequently clarified that they will participate in the current governance discussions regarding the selection of the head of council and the issue of representation. It should be noted, though, just for clarity, that it is only the province of Ontario that can approve a separation request, or conversely, an amalgamation. So I said, they further clarify their position that as well, that Mississauga does not want any change that would result in their councillors being in a minority position. And secondly, they do not want to increase the size of the current council. So there are 25 members of council currently at the Region of Peel. So what are Caledon's interests? It's our view that Caledon should remain and be an active and positive partner in making Peel Region work. Secondly, to work in a collaborative way with Brampton and Mississauga to find a solution to the representation issue. To ensure that the matter of effective representation is addressed in any change to the status quo, and I'll speak later about the concept of effective representation. And finally, to learn how others have addressed the issue of representation. So, is there any legitimacy to the claims of Brampton and Mississauga regarding problems with representation? The short answer is yes. In fact, in 2003, the province developed a plan to increase the size of regional council by, there's a typo here, that should be three, two from Mississauga and one from Brampton, to reflect in part the growth in these two cities. The province did not, however, reduce the representation from Caledon back in 2003, presumably because of the need to maintain the concept of effective representation. And again, I'll speak to that in a minute. Regional Council now has embarked on a further review, and Caledon is an active and engaged participant. The two previous reports from the two other cities speak to the need to do independent studies. So there's been a decision made to do these studies, presumably to quantify the level of subsidies provided to one part of the region on another. And there have been several studies commissioned over the years, and they seem to released at around the time that discussions on governance take place. So these studies are really a snapshot in time, and the attempt to identify a source of revenue and match it with the location of an expenditure. So for example, back in 2003, the city of Mississauga commissioned this study, and they tried to determine where the money was coming from and where the money was actually going to. So as an example, a portion of a taxpayer's bill from Clarkson in Mississauga may go to fund a road widening in Churchville, or a taxpayer in Bellefontaine may see their tax dollars flow to fund a public housing project in Malton, or to pay the salary of a paramedic stationed in Port Credit. So these arrangements will inevitably change with each successive budget. The pattern of expenditures, again, is dependent on two things: the services being provided by the region at that particular point in time when you do the study or the assessment, and the annual budget. So are these studies helpful? Not really. I mean, the whole purpose of local government is to collect funds to pay for services across a geographic area. Regional government, in particular, was designed and created to move money throughout the region to pay for services that the regional council determines to be a priority at that point in time. For example, during the early days of regional government, much of the capital and operating budget at the region went to hard services and social services. And much of that spend occurred where most of the population was at that time, which was in the southern portions of Peel. Now, much of the budget has now been shifted in a northerly direction, and the nature of the spend is different. Each year, the range of services being provided by the region tends to change. We've had downloading, uploading, phasing in and phasing out of GTA pooling, uploading of social service costs, change in arrangements to fund the funding formulas for public health, EMS. So these continually change with successive provincial governments. And again, when you take a snapshot in a particular year, it's based on the current arrangement as to how these costs, shared services are addressed. Inevitably, a few years go by and there's a change. There's been a great deal of discussion, I think, about the concept of representation by population. And rep by pop is one of several factors in considering the design of a local government. The Supreme Court of Canada's Carter decision in 1991 was a landmark case which helped inform numerous provincial decisions regarding local government representation. This case is often referred into OMB decisions about representation. So it is the case. The court held that absolute voter parity, where all electoral districts would contain the same number of electors, is an impossible objective. Pure rep by pop is an impossible objective. Instead, the court directed that the concept of effective representation should apply. This principle recognizes that variants from rep by pop are legitimate and necessary on the basis that, and this is from the case, geography, community, history, community interest, and minority representation needs to be taken into account. So how have other orders of government addressed this issue? Well, the federal government has Elections Canada, being the body responsible for adjusting the size of Parliament. Each province has an Electoral Boundaries Commission as part of the federal redistribution process. Any review considers rep by pop as well as community identity, interest, historical patterns, geographic size of the electoral district, its effective representation. So how does Ontario deal with this? Well, the design principles are similar to the federal process. In fact, in June of 2015, Ontario decided to increase the number of MPPs to better reflect population and ensure effective representation. So for 2018, there will be 15 additional members will be added to Queen's Park, increasing the number of elected representatives from 107 to 122. And despite the depopulation in Northern Ontario, they added an additional riding, presumably to ensure the principle of effective representation was maintained. Other regions. Halton is experiencing population growth and have determined that a change in their representation is required. Their proposal is to add three new members, two for Milton and one for Oakville, as a result of development in North Oakville. They are not considering and are not contemplating reducing the representation from Burlington or Halton Hills. So you can see in the federal, provincial, and other regional governments, the model essentially is to increase slightly the size of the governing body to reflect a better representation by population. It is not to reduce the size. It is to add to those areas which, in fact, are growing at a higher rate than other areas within the jurisdiction. So I mentioned at the outset that the region had hired a facilitator. The facilitator has tabled 10 options. And I'll go through this chart with you at this point. But these are the options which are currently on at the table. And the CAOs and the mayors will be debating these options and hopefully coming up with a preferred option at the governance committee in June. So the top line, the now, the two, the three, four, those are the 10 options. So now represents the status quo. So currently there are 24 members of Peel Council, 12 are from Mississauga, 7 from Brampton, and 5 from Caledon. Option 2 sees 28, the size of the council increasing by 4, 28 total, Mississauga 12, Brampton 11, Caledon 5. And it goes, you can see each option. So the first of 5 essentially have Caledon's representation remaining at 5. Options 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10 see Caledon's representation being reduced from 5 to either 3 or 2 or 1. General observations. Obviously, options 1 through 5 best represent Caledon's interests. 6 to 10 would see a reduction in the number of duly elected representatives from Caledon at Peel Council. So again, that's the current state. There will be further discussions which will be taking place at the committee. There will be a formal recommendation provided to you. We'll have a complete copy of the facilitator's latest report in the next agenda. But the purpose of this meeting today is simply to bring you up to date as to where things currently sit, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
Thank you, Pat. And I have two here, or I've got several now. Councillor DeBoer.
I guess the one comment that always keeps coming back, and I think he was talking here about Mississauga saying that they're paying for everything now. The reality is since 74, Caledon's paid their percentage share to the region all along, correct?
Correct.
And we weren't getting any of the growth or any of the development. It was all happening in the lower part in Mississauga initially and Brampton as it moves forward, and now that we're getting a little bit of it. So I think that part is missed here, but I think it's also very important when they end up with the discussions around who's paying for what. We paid for a lot and never got anything out of it till now.
Right. So in the first status report I provided a few months ago, we touched on that issue because many of the services currently being provided by the region really don't benefit a Caledon. So, for example, the region has over 14,000 of its own public housing units. Together, they are also the service manager for another larger number of units as well. And frankly, the demand for those units, and they're all completely paid for by the taxpayers, there's no subsidy from the federal or provincial governments. The benefiting area, basically, for the social services and social housing is, generally speaking, you know, south of Mayfield Road. And yet, we just heard from the previous speaker about how assessment works. And to your point, the property is a property, if it's assessed at $600,000 in Caledon or $600,000 in Mississauga, the region will take its total budget. It has to provide social housing. It will derive the money it requires for its services based on the assessed value, whether that $600,000 home is in Bell Fountain or in Brampton.
Yes, and I think to that point from before is that on a per capita basis per person, like our average house price, I believe, in Caledon is a little bit higher. So on average, a Caledon resident is actually an individual, is paying more to the region than a resident individually in the other two municipalities. But we also realize that there is benefit to shared services, which, if I might say, has transit ever entered into any of this discussion?
No, but it could, and it perhaps it should. But I mean, I think to your point, it is challenging to try to determine where is the money coming from and who is benefiting, because it changes every year. It depends on the service. And if you accept the fact that the whole purpose of regional government, the whole purpose of local government, is to collect funds to provide services to a broader area, that's what regional government was created to do in the first place. So yes, certain areas attract more of the spend based on the priorities of council that in that particular moment in time. As things change and infrastructure moves north up the lake, then it's a different arrangement. And yes, that's the whole purpose of government, and that's the whole purpose of regional government.
And I didn't want to use my example as being something that had been understood as being that I'm opposed to the way it's spent. I think the way that it works is fine in the sense that you are providing a pool of services that's needed throughout the municipality. I just think that there's more savings, and I'm going to use the obvious one, is transit. as being an obvious savings with it delivered at the region, like it is in the other three municipalities, regional municipalities. So, like when you hear Brandon Mississauga talking about we want more efficiencies, that's one that could very easily have provided collectively a more efficient service. Mm-hmm.
Okay, Councillor Mizzapelli.
Thank you, Mayor Thompson. Thank you, Mr. Multh, for your presentation. Just to go through it in chronological order, just some observations / questions that I had. When you talked about, it just struck me as curious, when you talked about the Brampton position and going through a study to do a cost-benefit analysis of the options ahead of them, I just find it very challenging to understand what the cost savings would be to go to a single municipality. There's so many unknowns there. Huge, obvious ones are how would we allocate regional debt? How would we allocate regional assets? Things like that. And that isn't a question one municipality can answer. It will lie at the region appeal and maybe even the province of Ontario to answer that question. So I think that will be a challenging study to undertake to understand what the cost benefit is accurately. When you talked about Mississauga's position, and I don't know whether you can answer this, but I found this odd that at this point in time, and I can understand point one, that they don't want to change a position that would put them in a minority position. But the second point is they don't want to increase the size of regional council. And yet I have noted over the growth of Peel Region over 40 years, Mississauga's representation has grown. So in the days when Mississauga grew, its representation on regional council grew. And then, as you said, the growth moved north, and to a large extent, the growth now is in central Peel, taking a position that they enjoyed previously where their representation was growing. Are you at all able to offer an explanation as to why they wouldn't want regional council to grow as a whole as the region grows?
No, I don't know why they took that position. I mean, to your point, when this issue was brought forward in 2003, the outcome was to increase the size of regional council by 3. So there were 2 additional representatives added to the regional table. In the previous report that I provided several months ago, we had a table which described the size of various governments. So the region of Niagara, for example, has a much smaller population and has a council, well Mike would know, the 30 plus. So it's a much larger council in the current arrangement, which is a much larger population and a smaller jurisdiction or smaller council here in Peel. I'm guessing their point might be if you get a governing body which is so large that it becomes unwieldy, I can understand that. But I think when you look at the various options that the facilitator had provided on the last slide, any of those numbers in terms of increasing the size of council is not unwieldy. It is not unwieldy. In fact, option 3 would essentially see, it wouldn't be adding any new elected officials because in Brampton they already exist. They're already at Brampton Council. So in a worst case scenario, there would be 4 additional representatives from Mississauga.
Right.
And again, you know, you can talk to experts about governance and the optimum size of a governing body. The numbers that have been described by the facilitator in the largest size of council is still not the largest council. It's a smaller than Niagara, it's certainly smaller than Toronto.
Right. Okay. You talked on slide 10 about at that time that the province did not recommend Caledon's representation being
right.
reduced.
Right.
And you used the word presumably to maintain effective representation.
Right.
Was it not clearly stated? Because later on in your slide deck, you talked about a federal case where effective representation for a list of reasons was important
sure.
to maintain.
So I was sitting in that chair when this came up last time at NPO. So The province appointed Justice Adams to undertake a review of the representation issue with the region and the municipalities. So his recommendation was to, and he heard all the evidence, his recommendation was to increase the size of Brampton Council immediately to 11, leave Caledon at 5, and increase the size of the Mississauga Council by a couple. When that report then was made public, the city of Mississauga didn't see the wisdom, and suggested that the government leave Caledon at 5, leave Brampton at 7, and add 2 for Mississauga. So the term effective representation was not in Justice Adams' report, although the concept was discussed during the negotiations. But really, what the government decided to do in the end in 2003 was reflect the fact there were changes in two of the growing communities, but it didn't make sense to do it at the expense of Caledon.
Right, okay. Further through your deck, I think it might be the chart itself.
Yep.
The facilitators, it says top 10 list.
Yep.
So did the facilitator prioritize, with the exception of the current, is that in priority?
No, I don't believe so. I think the facilitator simply presented this chart to the mayors and CAOs at the last meeting and said these are 10 options. Didn't weigh them, didn't say which is good, bad, or indifferent. It was a result, I think, of the dialogue and discussion that he had with the individual members of council. So they listened to everything, they did their own review, and they identified 10 potential options, and that's what we have before us.
Okay, and the last thing, Mayor Thompson, is just an observation for me, and I find all too often we zero in on issues and we don't stop to pan back and look at the bigger picture, and this is a prime example of where this can happen, and it's... The timing is perfect because there's, with the provincial plan review, I've actually read some regional policies, and it talks about allocating a value to what many deem undeveloped, but it's natural landscape. Mm-hmm. And it has a real effect on things like health, air quality, water quality, mitigating climate change, extreme weather, those types of things. And I hope in these discussions it isn't overlooked that the value of having a landmass that's equivalent to the area of Brampton and Mississauga combined that has a large natural component and the positive benefit that that yields to the region of Peel and beyond as a whole. And there is savings there. It may be indirect, but mm-hmm. real nonetheless. And I think that's important to recognize as a savings Brampton, Mississauga enjoy because of the situation that Caledon is. And I think that has value and needs to be recognized.
And if I could, through you, Your Worship, that's an excellent point. And back in 2003, the argument that was used was that Caledon were the lungs of Peel. So it's air quality, it's relating to providing safe drinking water. Obviously, you know, we see an awful lot of activity on the aggregate front in Caledon. Well, that product is going to serve developments to the south of Mayfield Road. So it is connected. There is an interconnection between the three municipalities. And you're right, it's more than just rep by population. It's about the land mass that was created when they created regional government back in the 70s. And there was a recognition that Peel County at the time was a unit, and that unit is connected. And it's more than just population, but it's connected in the ways I've mentioned.
Councillor Shaughnessy.
Thank you, Mr. Moyle. The aggregate one, I talked to my fellow councillors down in Mississauga because aggregate isn't fair. They get to build the buildings and get the DCs. We just get to pay for the roads to fix them up. Actually, we don't even quite get enough money to do that. But part of the discussion, I'm fortunate, I was lucky to be part of going to the governance meetings, and body language is sometimes more interesting than what is said. But part of the governance issue, and I want to go back to the Adams report because I'm not sure about this. Okay. Part of the governance issue is not just looking at representation of regional council, but it's also about the chair.
Right.
And what I don't think my town councillors are aware of, and I just want, that's why I want to say it, is here at the town of Caledon, the mayor votes. At the region appeal, he votes on a tie situation. So where the region appeal with Mississauga having 50% of the vote and then having the chair from Mississauga, it automatically, I shouldn't say automatically, but it could be that then they automatically have a majority, not that it happens all the time. So I think the chair discussion has to be linked into the governance issue because of the possibility of that influence. When we did this back in 2003 with the Adams report, did we actually look at the regional chair as being part of that, or is this something new with this governance issue?
So the terms of reference for the Adams report in 2003 was just to focus on representation and not the issue of the election of the regional chair. What happened during the it was also services. So Mississauga had asked for a reconsideration of services. So who should be providing arterial roads? How should land ambulance be delivered? Various services. At the end of the day, the recommendation of the Justice Adams and the ultimate decision of the province was to do two things. One was to change the representation and made a very strong suggestion to the region, which they picked up on, to review the way planning is done. So there was a memorandum of understanding which eventually was signed among the municipalities to ensure this bottom-up planning took place. That came as a result of these discussions back in 2003. On the roads piece, there were some changes made to roads, and I gather the region's considering yet another version of that, I think, this week, I think.
Since you brought up the roads, it is an important issue, and I've also said that Mississauga and Brampton enjoy provincial highways, and with the leapfrogging of development to the north of Caledon, we have all that intermodal, interregional truck traffic coming down through Caledon, but there aren't any major provincial highways to move that. And so when my councillors to the south of us complain that we have so many roads that are regional roads, they are about moving goods, where they have the 401, the Queenie, 403, 427, and we just don't have that. Mm-hmm. And it is about the goods that come down through Caledon to Brampton to Mississauga. And I think that's important for them to realize. Thank you very much, Mr. Moore.
Councillor Groves.
Thank you, Mayor Thompson. So I guess, Pat, when we go back to Justice Adams' report and when we looked at servicing and to touch on the roads, mm-hmm. when they looked at it, you talked about the services, social services, right. As we know that during that discussion and in 2003, It really became a wash. It was really a moot point because while we may have a lot of arterial roads here, we don't use as much of the social services here as right. our neighbors to the south. And the other point, I guess, in the 1991 case, is that what mm-hmm. you said,
yep.
where geography.
Right.
So, you know, you're talking about representation by population. Well, we've got a huge area geographically. So I would think that all of those things would be the same thing. You know, it's the same conversations, it's the same discussions. And I guess I don't know what the province would, how the province would see this, but there's been a lot of downloading to the region appeal mm-hmm. in terms of social housing,
ambulance,
public health, long-term care facilities.
Correct.
During that, over the those that period, we, the region appeal, we've done a lot of improvements to our social housing. We've built more social housing. We've built long-term care facilities, and we've managed them, and we've spent a ton of money there. So how would is that playing into any of this, and is the province looking at that?
So the province, and I should have touched on this at the beginning of the report, in order to make any of these changes, the province has to pass a regulation to allow the conversation to take place. The change in representation or the migration of services occurs through a triple majority vote. So the majority of the municipalities in the region, so two of the three, representing the majority of the population, so you know where that is, and majority votes at the regional council are required in order to effect any change. Having said that, while it's a local decision, the province still has to pass the regulation to make this happen. Our advice, and we've had some long conversations with the CAO in particular on this, is the other parties are taking positions, and we understand their positions. Caledon traditionally has always been a strong partner in Peel Region and is wanting to work with parties as opposed to do anything other than the opposite. So our advice is to continue on with that approach. And we understand the concerns that have been expressed about representation growth in the two municipalities. So is there a way of accommodating their desire to reflect the fact that they're growing and at the same time not impact Caledon's interests? And I think Caledon traditionally for 20 plus years has been a good partner, wants to work with the neighbors, and wants to ultimately deliver services to the taxpayers in as most efficient way as possible. I know at Peel Council, at the last meeting or the meeting before, there was a report on service satisfaction by residents of Peel Region on the services mm-hmm. being provided by the region. They're at an all-time high. In many cases, you look at significant changes to structures of government when there's a problem. If the council chambers at Peel on Thursdays were full of 300 or 400 residents complaining about high taxes, poor services, inability to deliver things on time, then that would be the driver for change. But frankly, quite the converse is happening. Mm-hmm. And Peel Region has been recognized throughout the country as being one of the most efficient, well-run municipal organizations in the country. So what is the problem we're trying to fix, I guess, is the issue. And clearly the problem is that two of the partners have some concerns about representation. And it's our recommendation you listen to them, you appreciate their concerns, you try to work with them. At the same time, maintain the interests of Caledon, which is this concept of effective representation.
And thank you. And looking ahead, and you talk about growth, I know that we're nowhere near Mississauga, Brampton, but down the road, Caledon is going to grow. And at this point, I think that we need to maintain what we have because right. we are whether we like it or not, the province is going to look to us as the next municipality to take on that growth in the future. So I would think that that would play a part of that would be a part of the discussions that's taking place as well.
I would agree.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and we'll look forward for the report coming back. And thank you so much, Pat, for taking the time and explaining this to us all and to the media. Thank you so much. All right, we'll move on to our next thing is correspondence. Is there anything in the correspondence package anybody that wants it brought forward? If not, then I will go to the acting mayor to ask if there's any announcements that you wish to make. Anybody else on, anybody over here, anybody got an announcement to make? Oh, Councillor Groves.
Thank you. I attended the Cross Currents event on Friday night. They were very appreciative of the funds that they received from the town to purchase the equipment. They were very grateful that they didn't have to lug the speakers and lug everything up the stairs, and it looked really great. It looked great. They had a really good turnout. The sound system was good. Everything was really good. So they wanted to let this council know how much they appreciate the generosity and the donation that they received. And certainly, they would like you all to come out and listen to some really nice music sometime.
So this is the funding from the golf tournament?
Yes.
Yes.
Thank
Just
you.
Need to clarify that. Councilor Mizzipelli?
Thank you, Mayor Thompson. Just to advise, May 28th from 6 to 9 p.m., the Lions Club will be hosting their Steak and Lobster Fest.
Okay.
You can get in touch and get tickets.
Great. Thank you for that. If there's no further announcements, or is there any inquiries? None? Yeah, I'm going to get to that. All right. If there's no council inquiries, and I don't see any, I'm going to go to proclamations. And May 10th is National Denim Day, as you've noticed. And we, you can see the pink ribbons and the denim here. This week of May 29th to June 4th is National Access Awareness Week. The week of May 30th to June 5th is Parachute Safe Kids Week. And the month of May is Foot Healthy Month. I guess that means not putting your foot in your mouth, but even though it means it's... Anyway, those are the proclamations that we have, and they are posted out in the foyer. Councillor DeBoer, since there's no other inquiries, I will now move on to the next session, the confidential session. Next on the item is a confidential session. Moved by Councillor Downey, second by Councillor Gross, that Council shall go into confidential session under Section 239. 3.1 of the Municipal Act for the purpose of confidential verbal report from John Fleming, Integrity Commissioner, for the purpose of training of the members regarding Council Code of Conduct. Okay, so we're going to take a break here. So can we start in about 10 minutes? Okay, that allows everybody. Oh, all in favor first? Carried. Okay, so we'll be back here. 10 minutes. So. Moved by Councillor Downey, second by Councillor Groves, of the confidential verbal report from John Fleming, Integrity Commissioner, for the purpose of training members regarding the Council Code of Conduct be received. All in favor? Carried. Moved by Councillor Downey, second by Councillor DeBoer, bylaw 2016-16-042, bylaw to confirm proceedings of Council for the Corporation of Town of Caledon in its council meeting held on the 10th day of May, 2016. All in favor? All in favor? Guys? Carried. Councillor McClure, do you want to move adjournment? Thank you. Thank you, everybody. Thanks. Second by Councillor Mizzipelli. Thank you very much, everybody.